the time when wargamers played with chainmail, and the rise of the Wizards of the Coast, there was an age of gamers. And unto this, Gygax, destined to bear the crown jewel of TSR upon a troubled brow, to show you all how to roll for initiative.
Welcome everyone to the Roll for Initiative podcast. This will be issue number 60, volume 2 of the Roll for Initiative podcast. I am DM Vince along with DM Nick. Nick, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How about you, Vince? Doing okay?
Good. We are the dynamic duo now.
Or not so dynamic duo, depending on how well we feel. So we'll
yeah.
See.
Yeah. We had a great show for you guys this week. This week we're gonna theme the show this week. We're gonna try basing everything off of one book, and it'll be the Greyhawk Adventures book.
Yeah, you know, I'm glad we're doing this kind of this theme thing, especially on this book. I actually like this book.
So do I.
Even though it came at essentially the twilight,
yeah,
of first edition AD&D, because if everybody sees the cover, compatible with the AD&D and the second edition AD&D game systems. So we could actually do a crossover with Thacko's Hammer if we wanted to.
Yeah, second edition, the edition we shall not acknowledge.
Not acknowledge. Okay.
I did.
But
that,
I like this.
I did that to annoy all the people out there who said they can't stand that.
Not acknowledge.
Yeah, so we're going to theme some stuff on that. There's some great monsters in there. Mm-hmm. There's some good items in there. So we just pulled a few things out that are really interesting, and we'll go over those. But first, Nick.
Yes.
How's gaming been going for you?
Pretty good. Actually, I don't remember. We did talk about a previous show. I did our expedition there to the Temple of Existential Evil.
Yes.
Which is basically the same as Temple of Elemental Evil. And it's going well. And that was just, I believe, 2 weeks ago. But this coming weekend, we're going to have like a big gaming extravaganza over Labor Day weekend. A friend of ours is coming in out of town. A friend, Adam, who's lives in Arizona. And he's coming in. In fact, I believe he'll be in tomorrow. He's going to be here till the 10th. And over like Saturday, maybe even Sunday, we're just going to have a big gaming extravaganza. A whole bunch of us going to be there. And we're going to, I don't know if we're going to do the current campaign, but we're going to do something. Word has it we're going to try to take on a dragon. So I'm not running it.
Okay.
Jeff's son, Raceland, is running the game. Yes, his name is Raceland.
Really?
Yes.
Huh.
Yes. He actually named him after the Dragonlance character.
Well, he's a huge
dragon. I don't know if I mentioned that before, but yes.
I think I remember you saying that way back in the beginning.
So I'm sure we're going to do that. We're probably going to play zombies and Great Space Race and who knows. But yeah, it's going to be fun. Really looking forward to it.
Cool.
What about you? What you got going on?
Well, I haven't done any gaming in the last week because I've been doing some schoolwork and studying because we're going back into the classes finally.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but by the time this is out, I've probably already played the first session. We'll be playing some Star Frontiers.
Ah, yeah, you mentioned that. That was Jason who said he played Star Frontiers at
He played at Gen Con. Yeah, with Chad, or Red, his name is.
Uh-huh.
And he had a good time with that. But I happened to actually, when I was at Gen Con, I saw the box set for Star Frontiers.
Oh.
At Half Price Books, they actually had a stand there.
Huh.
And it was $12 for the whole box set. In perfect condition. Nice. And all was missing was the counters.
Wow, that's like 1984 prices.
Yeah. So I snatched the book up and I bought it.
Very cool.
I was a little bit late to getting there, but if I would have got there 5 minutes earlier, I would have snagged a top secret SI box too.
Oh, that would have been cool.
I saw it and I saw some nerdy guy pick it up and run away with it.
Gee, a nerdy guy.
Yeah, I know. Gen Con,
that really narrows it down.
Yeah, well, what do you do? You know, we're playing it this Thursday, hopefully, and
that'll be fun.
I'm running that. I have a little thing planned up to, you know, to get us back into the spirit or get through the Book of Sorrows to start up again.
Yeah, I was meaning to ask about that. The Book of Sorrows, that's gonna get going pretty soon.
Yeah, we're gonna be the whole group minus one person, and unfortunately, that one person can't return because he has work obligations.
Yeah, real life. Ah.
Yeah, what are you going to do?
I know. Just and, quit his job. There you go.
I know a lot of people have, were asking about Jason's project on the forums and Facebook. You'd have to find Jason on Facebook. It's really easy to find. You can't miss it. It says Jason Elliott, and you will find him, and you can just ask him about his project, how it's going, and he may pop in from time to time to tell us about it. But I know he's still in the process of writing it. It's funny, too, because we were talking at Gen Con about that, and he's just like, oh, I'm writing a spy game, or, you know, like Top Secret, and I'm like, really? I go, because guess what? I just wrote and finished writing a James Bond retro clone.
Wow.
And he's like, really? Wow, we're on the same wavelength. I'm like, yeah. I go, if you want to combine projects, he's like, well, mine's more going to be more on conspiracy theories. I'm like, oh, mine's more of just a retro clone of a James Bond spy thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, mine's already in the layout phase, and I'm waiting to get someone to do a cover for me.
See, that's the one thing I don't think I could ever do was create my own game. I just don't think I'm that good, that creative enough. I just don't think I could do all the game mechanics and all the background and stuff. I just don't think I could do it.
Well, it's more of a taking what's there and rearranging it and updating things and making new things to it. So
yeah, I mean, I applaud people who can do that, and you know, just knowing and play testing it and making sure everything works. I mean, that's just amazing in my opinion.
We'll see how it goes if it gets past the layout first. So,
another thing, I guess it could be related in this week in gaming is, there's a rumor that's bandying about now. I guess this was after...
Rumor control.
Yeah. This is after Gen Con. And yeah. I just saw something posted on one of the forums.
Right.
And there's a rumor that Wizards of the Coast is kicking around the idea of republishing older versions of D&D.
That's not a rumor. Yeah, they did actually say they were going to do that.
Now, does this mean everything back to like first edition, or are they just talking third edition stuff? I mean,
that they weren't clear on. And
they were pretty vague on that.
Then. That they were vague on, because people did ask, does that include like the old box sets and like the old first edition books, and they didn't comment on that.
So this isn't a rumor. They did say that.
Yes.
They didn't say where they're going to do it, but they're, what, kicking around the idea?
I think they said they are going to do it, but they weren't certain when, because I remember reading it on the OSR Gaming forums. Someone actually quoted the blog saying they were going to do the reprint of old products. I don't know if it meant Dead Tree or PDF, so.
Right, yeah, because I remember, I think it was a year or two ago, where they yanked all their PDFs from the internet that you can purchase. If I don't know if you recall.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah, the scandal.
That really got a lot of people angry. I was glad when I picked up a lot of stuff that I didn't have in my original collection. At least I have it on a PDF now. Like a lot of the original RPGA adventures.
Yeah.
That, you know, are hard to come by. A lot, you know, I think there's like a set of four that were written by Frank Metzer.
Yes. And, I actually have one of the RPGA tournament rules modules.
Ah.
I think there was only one of them. I got it at Gen Con. I can't remember the name, but it says on the cover, RPGA tournament rules.
And it has these four I remember were like, they were RPGA tournament ones. And doesn't mean you can't, you know, take them out of, like, not use them as a tournament, put them in an adventure. But anyway, it's just, I remember when all that, you know, went down, when they yanked them all out. That caused quite a stir. They didn't make a lot of friends.
But, I don't see why they yanked first edition, second edition, and classic. I mean, those have been sorry to say, floating around the piracy internet for how long?
Yeah, I mean, anybody who has a torrent account probably could do that. Not that I would condone such a thing. I mean, I wouldn't. Honestly, I wouldn't do it. I don't condone piracy.
I'm not a condoner, you were going to say.
I don't condone it. But, I mean, if you want to take that risk yourself, you go right on ahead. So, but, yeah, you're right. I mean, that stuff's been floating around. But, I mean, who knows what's going to happen with this? I mean,
but what I don't want to see is I don't want to see a first edition player's handbook with a new cover with the Wizards symbol on it. No, I do not want to see that.
No, I don't want to see that either.
And if you're going to do it, just
leave it as is.
Yeah, there was a lot of people alluding to the fact that they were going to do that too, but those were just people commenting, so people stirring the pot pretty much.
Right, sure. I mean, it's the interwebs.
But I would hate that, to see my player's handbook, first edition, with another cover with a wizard symbol, or the same cover with the wizard symbol on it.
Well, I don't know if they're going to do a PDF. Is it going to be print on demand, which would not be such a bad idea in that respect, because that seems to be the way the industry is going, and quite in some cases is print on demand. So, or a little both. I mean, there are people out there I know in the OSR movement that they do both print on demand and PDF, whatever trips your trigger, you know?
Yeah, they'll do a free PDF download with no artwork, and then you can grab the print on demand with full artwork. And
right. It's good options for everybody, whatever they want. So Nick, I just wanted to mention that to people out there. No, they haven't heard already, so
I'm sure. Yeah.
So now I'm going to even cause more of a
stir in the pot.
Yeah, stir out the pot here and see what happens. Actually, I'd like to hear from other people out there, comment on the. I'm sure already commenting on our forums about this particular issue that came up. But
yeah, they probably have more than 10 posts too.
Well, hey. What's that supposed to mean?
Nothing at all. No, I don't know.
Sorry, I just don't like posting about the same stuff over and over again. Everybody talking about multi-classing and level limits. You know, I've talked about this stuff time and time again. Let's talk about something new.
It's new, fresh ideas with new people.
Fresh ideas. Yes. I don't feel like commenting because, people already comment on, I don't have anything to contribute.
So what do we got for stars this week?
We do have one review. It's a 4-star review over there at iTunes.
Yay.
And this is by The Milford.
The Milford.
And whoever this is says, "I miss Jason."
That's the headline?
Yes. Exclamation point.
Well, he hasn't really been gone one show now so far. So.
Well, this person already misses him. So, great podcast when all three hosts are present. Merely good when Jason is not. While I like Nick and Vince as part of the complete team, I don't enjoy the content as much when Jason is there to pontificate on the more technical aspects of the rules. Yes, he used the word pontificate.
It must be Jason who wrote that.
I think so.
Yeah.
Jason tends to keep the show on track, adds a wit and curiosity, and much needed focus to Nick and Vince's lighter goofiness. Honestly, I'd rather wait a longer time between podcasts provided the three hosts were present than to listen to a compromise show. Don't get me wrong. I love all three of the hosts, but they function best as a team. And that was by The Milford. Well, thank you, The Milford. I wish we could have Jason on, but you know what? He's got other commitments. He's really strung himself pretty thin, and this is one of the things he had to give up. Doesn't mean he won't be on from time to time. He might. He's already said, might come on as a guest from here and there, when time permits. So as of right now, it's just Vince and I.
Yeah, unfortunately, you're going to have to deal with us and our goofiness.
Yes, our lightheartedness, whimsy manner of such. I mean, I could start doing voices of other people if you like.
No, we'll pass on that, Nick.
I think we'll pass on that. But that's the only starred review on that. And just to remind everybody, if you want to give us any reviews, please head over to iTunes and go over to the iTunes store and type in Roll for Initiative. Follow the links to our page there. Give us a review. We read them all. We take them all in. And also a great way to download previous episodes of Roll for Initiative. So please go ahead and give us a review if you can.
If you also hit that share with a friend button, that's right on the iTunes there, and share it with a friend, that also helps the ratings as well.
Mm-hmm. As of right now, we have 75 reviews and an average of 5 stars. We're getting close to 100 reviews. I'm pretty excited about that.
And we're only 40 off of 100 shows.
So maybe they'll coincide.
Eventually, yeah.
100, around 100 show, 100 reviews. Wouldn't that be something?
Yeah, that'd be amazing.
That would be pretty cool. So yeah. What's going on in the forums there, Vince?
We were working on the forums. We reskinned it. We put some new free features in for people. We have the library section up more advanced, so you could put down more than just TSR games in there. OSR Gaming has turned more into just more of a old school role playing site, more than an old school Renaissance site. We're promoting just every game that was back in the day.
And that's good.
Figure we'll go that route instead of just doing the whole we're in Renaissance revival. We're, you know, they already have the OSR Renaissance group.
Yeah, see?
So we, you know, we don't need to be competing.
Well, that's kind of redundant. Old school Renaissance Renaissance group?
Yeah.
It's like the Department of Redundancy Department
of the All American American.
Yes. But that's kind of cool that we're taking in a lot of, you know, all people old school gaming of various types. I like that.
Yeah, so you'll see things like Villains and Vigilantes up there. You'll see talk about DC Heroes, Marvel Superheroes, Boot Hill, Star Frontiers, even war games that they used to play in, like Avalon Hill, games made by Avalon Hill, I should say.
So all you fat beards, we have a place for you to be on the internet called osrgaming.org. For all your fat beard needs.
And I also did a revamp of the website. I gave it a cosmetic touch-up.
Yeah, it looks good.
We got a new banner on the top that will roll finish with the dragon spouting out against the castle.
Anybody who could guess the background where it came from, they get 50 experience points.
All right, I guess, yeah, and I put a background in there, which now I can't tell you because Nick just promised 50 experience points, so...
Why not? No, you can tell them where it came from.
It came from the coloring book.
If anybody remembers it was the AD&D coloring book, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
That was one of the things you had to color in on the inside. I figured, hey, why not? It's a matte background. It looks kind of cool.
I know. It looks neat. I like it. I'm looking at it right now. Like, that's pretty sweet.
And I revamped everything to be more eye appealing as far as so it's not so cluttered.
I want to say the banner for issue 59, pretty nice snag wherever that came from. That's perfect.
Oh, yeah. Matt put that one up.
Matt, fantastic job there, buddy.
I know. I was like, that's really cool.
Yeah, I'm like, those are Myconids. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's perfect. I don't know where he found that, but that really typifies what I thought Myconids are like.
Definitely. I put up my little logo for my blog that I keep going, the Evil GM that I have going on.
Oh, speaking of GMs, have you heard from the great
Joe DM?
Yes.
Well, yes and no.
Yes and no.
Yes, I have, and no, he's not interested in coming on the show.
Oh.
Yeah. But we
is he not, not gaming anymore? He's not doing that anymore?
No, he is, but he is. It's on a very limited basis now, he said. He really, in fact, he said he hasn't picked up the books in probably months.
Oh, wow.
He said the last thing he actually was playing was second edition. He never moved on to third or fourth.
Mm.
And then he gets, you know, he said he's pretty much, he's older now and he's married, so.
I'm older, I'm married.
Yeah, I know.
Got kids. Still game. Okay.
He kind of gave me every excuse in the book, but we did have a good time reminiscing about the times playing in the park and in the library in the basement and how we were trying to avoid adults and everything. So it was fun.
Yeah, I do that still, too. I don't have it in a basement, but yeah.
Oh, you avoid adults?
Yeah. Every chance I get.
Yeah.
I'm Peter Pan. Ha ha.
A lot of people have asked, and we finally put it up here. We do have a donate button on the site.
Yes, we do.
A lot of people said, well, can't we donate? And we were always like, no. Well, since I picked up a lot of the costs now, I decided to put a donate button up just to help counteract the server costs and everything now.
So, yeah, if you want to, I believe if you have PayPal or
credit card,
pay us in gold pieces. I don't know.
Yeah. I donate dollar. Every dollar helps, and I hate to even ask for that, but whatever.
Yeah, I mean, if you wish to donate, that's perfectly fine with us. It's gonna just, like Vin says, goes to maintenance of the website, you know, and it helps keep the website going and show rolling.
Definitely. All right, so let's head into some sage advice.
Master, they're at the gates again. Master, it looks like another band of adventurers.
Adventurers again? Always the same. Coming to me for sage advice.
So we're in sage advice. Sage advice. Oh, wait. Jason would yell at us right now.
I know.
I actually have two voicemails this week, Nick. Not one, but two.
Not one, but two.
And the first one, I have to tell you a little history, some background.
Is it from Lass?
No, it's not from Lass.
Aw.
She hasn't had a chance to send one. She said she will, though.
Okay, good.
Anyway, so the first one that I have here, actually, I was sitting here on Skype writing up the show notes and listening to something for the show, and the call came through, and I actually picked it up, and the guy was like,
Speechless.
He's like, oh, I'm sorry. I was trying to call the Roll for Initiative voicemail. I'm like, oh, you've reached the Roll for Initiative hotline. I'm standing by. And he was like, whoa. Cool balls
are standing by.
He's like, I didn't expect anybody to answer. I'm like, yeah, I kind of accidentally picked up because it was a reaction of someone calling me on Skype.
That's funny.
He's like, oh, I didn't know. I was like, yeah, sorry about that. He's like, oh, I just want to let you know you guys do a great show, and I appreciate everything you do. And after being in, I think he went camping for a certain amount of time, it was good to come back and listen to his iPod with our shows.
Oh, how nice.
And then he said, can I call back and leave a voicemail with a question? I said, certainly. And here goes the question.
Hi, RFI guys. This is DM Cal. I want to say first, thank you for your input on the social combat issues I was running into. It's been rather helpful, and as I just passed on before, I failed my surprise check when someone actually answered the phone rather than just letting it go to voicemail. Thanks for what you guys do. It's a wonderful treat every time Roll for Initiative comes out. I do have a question regarding character creation, and I guess more importantly, character background. You guys were just talking about secondary skills. I personally love them, and in my previous gaming group, you started with a secondary skill before you even rolled up your stats, because that influenced your character immensely. If you were a fighter who was a fisherman, you started talking in fishing metaphors. Anywho, I'm just wondering, for you guys, when you do character creation as a DM, how much sort of homework do you assign PCs for backstory? Do you give them, like, here's a world, learn about it? Do you tell them, fill out 20 questions as if they were an actor doing sort of method acting or preparing a character? Do you ask them to come in with some, things that are, like, what's a taboo for them? Or what's a holiday or high holy day? Just wondering what you guys do on this. If you do anything, maybe you just go roll the characters and figure it out as you go along. But your help would be appreciated, and thanks a bunch. Take care, all. Bye-bye.
So what do you think, Nick?
Good questions. You know, the group of people I've been playing with, and we've been playing together for, gosh, almost 10 years now, they are all familiar with the same game world.
Okay.
And they, as far as their characters are concerned, they have a basic understanding of the political divisions and, you know, where different clans may be, different cities, what the political, where the political winds are blowing in various places. That helps with their background. Some of the things, I guess, they can roll up, where their character was born. Are they of noble birth? What's their social status? I think those sorts of things do play into that. I believe in the Dungeon Master's Guide, there's a few charts. I know they're used for NPCs, but I've used them for player characters in the past to determine, what's their, just their motivations and basic personalities. You can use that if you wish. If I'm talking a long campaign, something that's going to go over multiple sessions, possibly several years. Now, if we're talking something short, that's just kind of, if it's just one or two sessions, just a one-off. I mean, just kind of go with what your gut is about your background of your character. Most people do the cliche things anyway. If you're going to play a dwarf, it's going to be some burly fighter with a Scottish accent, probably. Or if it's a thief, he's probably not going to be very talkative and kind of secretive and something like that. So, but like for a long campaign, I think we go into some detail. I know some DMs, they will actually have like a session zero where they just do character creation that session. So I've done that too. And that's pretty fun because that devotes a lot of time to, not just putting out the stats, which are actually pretty quick, but that whole background. And that helps, I think, me as a DM, where I get ideas from people's backgrounds of their characters, where I can use maybe as plot points.
Yeah.
Maybe as seeds along the trail of their adventuring life, and things might pop up. So, yeah, that's what I do. What about you, Vince?
I really don't require much except for maybe a few lines of background story.
Mm-hmm.
That's mostly about it. But session zero you were talking about, that goes back into the day of way back in the days. I mean, plenty of DMs have done that, but I think White Wolf made that an official thing called Prelude,
mm-hmm.
where you would spend a session just developing your character with the storyteller and just focusing on that one character you're playing, putting the background together, building the character, and then have like a mini awakening for the character.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't really require much because most of my campaigns are just like a couple shots or
mm-hmm.
maybe like 6 months, like the Book of Sorrows.
Which might be starting up again.
Yes. Those characters actually did, some of them did write some story to their characters, others didn't.
Right.
I really didn't mind.
Oh, yeah. It's like, I mean, I don't require it of my players. They have like a real extensive background. If they want to, that's entirely up to them. I mean, if they like want to like just write two or three sentences, something like that, just about their character, or they're like, you know what? I really don't know. I'm just going to see as I go. I'm like, okay, whatever you want to do. So,
but I also reward characters or players, I should say, for they vote the time. They write a backstory. I'll give them like 100 experience points if it's really good.
Yeah, I've actually done that with one character. I actually wrote an actual multi-page backstory to the character. The funny thing is that the character I was playing as a half-elf ranger cleric. You can't get ranger cleric.
Yeah.
He was the only good character in the party.
Oh.
Everybody else was like evil or chaotic neutral, neutral evil. I was like, I wrote this whole character background. He's probably not even going to last two sessions. Someone's going to kill him.
And how long did he last?
He actually lasted the whole campaign and actually, in no uncertain terms, stopped Grummish from coming back into the world through an avatar of his.
Cool.
Yes. He sacrificed his life, but he stopped Grummish One Eye from unleashing chaos and evil into the world.
Cool.
So, yeah, it was pretty cool.
Well, thanks for the voicemail. Anyone else who wants to call in, 870-465-8254-4210. Yeah, that's it. Right?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, okay. 865-4210. I just had a memory lapse there. I had to look at the paper again. 570-865-4210, the RFI hotline.
Hotline.
We do have one more voicemail, and this one comes from Andy. So let's play that one.
Okay.
Hey, guys. This is Andy, and I had a question about aerial combat. I know there are some sections in the Player's Handbook and the DMG, but they seem to largely revolve around, near as I could tell, players on flying mounts fighting each other. And I'm much more curious about how you handle a party on the ground fighting a enemy flying at them, whether it's, let's say, a giant eagle or giant bats or things that, in my mind, would be swooping down and attack and then flying away again. How do you account for the limited amount of time that that creature is going to be there attacking if the players, for example, don't win initiative? Are they going to miss a chance to have a melee attack? Obviously, ranged weapons would still work, assuming the creature hasn't flown too far away. But, or do you just kind of flub it and assume that the players are going to have a chance to take a swing whenever it does fly by, kind of all at once? So, just curious how you guys adjudicate that, because I'm torn about how to approach it. I don't want to make it too difficult for the players, but at the same time, I want to have, you know, some realism about what this effect would be like, this death coming from the skies. So again, I'd love to hear your thoughts. Thanks so much. Keep rolling, Will. Bye.
So he said keep rolling, Will, or is that Well?
I think Well.
Oh, okay. I thought he was saying keep rolling a Will or something.
Keep rolling, Will. Is he talking about Will Wheaton?
Yes.
Wheaton!
Oh. Oh, no. Calm down.
So, aerial combat, Vince, and I guess specifically, if the PCs are underground, they're fighting an aerial combatant.
Well, you have to remember that combat rounds are so quick. Mm-hmm. What are they, like 6 seconds for each action? Or is it a round mm-hmm. of 6 seconds? I don't remember exactly offhand. But combat is just so quick. It's like this boom, boom, boom that the players would get a chance to attack a flying creature because they're going to swoop down. And you have to think of this as, think of it cinematically or like as far as a movie was concerned, fighting. That eagle comes swooping down to attack. And at that same time, the player is defending and swiping back. All happening like this. Boom, 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 boom. So it's not like it just goes, the creature like goes, comes down, attacks, and then flies away, and then it's your attack.
Right.
It's not like the Final Fantasy Tactic games you're probably thinking of when they attack and they jump away and then, you know.
Well, yeah, like in, I hate to say it's like in real life.
Yeah.
I mean, if you ever seen any shows of, you know, nature shows like on National Geographic or History Channel or whatever, you know, you'll see various, like, for example, various birds of prey. I mean, they'll swoop down to attack their prey. Some of them will hover. They'll flit about. So, and you'll see whatever it is, maybe trying to defend itself. Kind of use that as a basis, maybe as an idea of what the combat between the players and the on the ground and whoever is flying above is doing. So that could be a little bit of an inspiration there.
Right. And if you're going to say the creature's going to swoop down and swoop away, I mean, you'd obviously give the player that was being attacked and maybe the one adjacent to the player a chance to attack this beast.
Now, if you want to be more specific, if you really want to be more tactical about the situation, that's where you would break out the battle mat, you know, the hex map or what have you, and then you would have everybody's movement rates and just treat it accordingly. You could go that route too. I mean, that it's entirely up to you.
This is where you'd have to use one of those 3D maps too.
Not necessarily.
No?
No. 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 If they're swooping down for an attack, obviously they're going to be in range of you too. Remember, they're going to have to be within, they're going to have to be within, they're going to look like a giant eagle, for example, coming in to attack. He's going to use his claw attacks to attack you. Obviously, he's going to be close enough that you're going to be able to hit with your lance or your sword or whatever.
Yeah.
So. But then it gets a little more dicey when you talk about, like, I don't know, maybe this giant eagle has a magic user that's using it as a mount, and this magic user has a wand of lightning. Okay, now you got a range attack involved. So yeah, it could be a little dicey in that response, especially when you're talking ranged attacks. It could be almost like the whoever's in the on the mount seems to be picking them off one by one, maybe.
Hmm.
So I don't know. I guess it depends on how complex you want to take it. I mean, you can get out the battle mat and draw it all out and just use the movement rates for the flying mount and the movement rates for your characters and do it that way. Or like we say, you know, you have to do that. Just assume that when they're swooping in to attack, they're going to be within range of melee weapons anyway.
Yeah, and like we said, a combat round happens so quickly that...
Yeah, it is like 6 seconds a round. I mean, that's fast.
Yeah, so the bird comes down, swoops to attack, and by the time it's swooping away, the player can get a swipe in, so...
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly.
So that's that, Andy. Hopefully we answered it. Otherwise, listen to issue, 56, about flying mounts and attacks and aerial attacks. Maybe that'll give you some help, too.
Yeah.
So let's head into table manners.
Yeah, I remember back in the day, a fella knew how to judge a fireball on the fly and how far the cleric could push the undead he turned. I tell ya, with all these min-maxers and munchkins, metagame and power game, there's something missing that I'm here to learn ya. Now sit down and crack your book while I commence to teach ya some.
Table manners.
So table manners this week, we're talking about Appendix 1, Zero Level Characters in the Greyhawk Adventures book. Page 117 is where it starts.
Yep.
It's kind of interesting because I've heard a few people actually play this method. It's kind of like playing a character before he's an adventurer. You get to actually build your character. And when I'm talking about build your character, not sit there and roll dice and say, okay, he's going to be a fighter or he's going to be a magic user or he's going to be a ranger, so I need to roll my dice right. You start out with the lowest stats possible. You have
no class at all.
No class.
Literally. Yeah, no class, man.
Yeah, no class, man. And you start with true alignment, true neutral alignment, and you get points. I believe it was 90 points plus 1d20 to start. And you get to distribute the points among the attributes to build your character. And every week, and it didn't say if it was like in-game week or week. I would assume it's in-game week when they said week. The character would add an additional 8 points to his statistics to raise them up. And each point, it costs a value to do a certain thing. And if you wanted to go from true neutral to, say, more of a good thing, it would cost you 5 points here to do that. And it's a really good way to... If you're bored of the normal D&D game, if you want to play something different, play zero-level characters to just, like, see how it is to live back then as a peasant.
Yeah, I kind of got the impression reading this, like, this is like if you were back in school. If you were back in grade school or high school, this is kind of like what the rules are. You're trying to figure out your way in the world. And one of the things I did like about this section is it does take into account one thing, and it's luck.
Yes.
It does take into account, you know, hey, there's a possibility that you just might get lucky and improve your points for success in a particular class and learning something, getting some insight into a particular class. And I kind of like that section because, you know, just like life, so a lot of it is just based on how lucky you are.
True.
And not just skill alone.
The one thing I do like about it is that it lets you dabble your character into different classes. Mm-hmm. As opposed to just being you're a ranger and you're stuck being a ranger. You could, because there's a section here called locating instructors and study time.
Yes.
And you can allocate the points to whatever study time you want to do for that week. So let's say you wanted to be a mage. So you say your guy studied a week for being a mage, or should be a magic user. They're using second edition terms in this here. Like we said, the book was on the cusp in the twilight, so you would study for a week being a magic user, and you would learn basic cantrip spells just to try it out and see how it is. And you're like, okay, the next week you're like, maybe my guy that week decided he wanted to study as a thief. So he learned some thieving abilities, nothing really major. You go with the DM and figure things out. Maybe you learn how to do pickpocketing.
Yeah.
So it kind of gives you a character that's more rounded.
Yeah.
You'd kind of be a jack of all trades by the time this is all over, but then you'd have to pick your class, though, but...
Yeah, you eventually do have to pick your class. There are a couple of issues I have with this.
What's that?
One is when they talk about, for example, on locating instructors.
Yeah.
It says finding clerics and fighters to teach a player character shouldn't be too hard. Finding mages is a little more difficult, and finding thieves and the rarer character classes is very difficult. I think I would, in my opinion,
right,
I would think that fighters are going to be easy to find, and I think right behind that would be thieves.
You think so?
Oh yeah. I think finding thieves would be a much more easier thing to find than clerics and mages.
Than just walking inside of a nearest temple and saying, hey, I'd like to learn.
I would say fighters and clerics, then thieves, then mages. Honestly.
Mages being the hardest?
I think so.
Why is that?
I think mages in themselves are, you're dealing with the occult arts, and they tend to be a little bit more, little less giving in knowledge, at least in my opinion.
Yeah.
I would think that. I think thieves, not so much, because I just get the impression that thieves are just not that uncommon in the world, you know?
Yeah, but I think a thief might be a little less trusting if someone comes up and said, I'd like to learn.
True.
Why? True. Why do you want to learn? You know, that whole speech. Now I can see a magic user master doing the same thing, saying, well, you know, you can't handle this. This is not for dabbling.
Now, it did in the subclasses. I can understand. Yeah, that'd be really difficult to be a druid. I think that would be a little bit difficult getting into.
You just put on your hemp robes and go out in the wilderness and eat some berries.
Yeah, and then you're a druid.
Yeah, then you're a druid.
No, you're just a hippie then.
Oh, okay, sorry.
But things like, you know, I guess cavaliers and paladins, yeah, that'd be hard to come by, try to get into. So it does, finding an instructor for those particular classes. Ranger, I think, falls in that. And monk probably one of the most difficult to get into if you're using a zero level character system.
I would definitely say if something like a paladin, cavalier, or a monk, that if you dabbled in that, one of the requirements would be you'd have to keep dabbling in that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Because especially a monk or a paladin, they're not going to just like say, sure, come on, we'll train you, and then you could just go away.
Yeah. One free trial today. Yeah, sure. Just come on in. Yeah, I don't see that happening.
Here's your free coupon.
And you know what? For almost to a certain degree, you could do that with clerics too, I would think. You know, because with clerics, at least how I play them, there are certain mysteries and secrets of that particular deity. You just don't want to get out to any, you know, Tom, Dick, and Harry.
Like using edged weapons?
Yes, like, hey, you had to bring that up
again. Yeah.
Yes, like using edged weapons. And for the record, yes, clerics could use edged weapons. Why? Sacrifices.
Those were evil ones.
Doesn't matter.
We're not arguing about that
today. I rest my case.
Yeah, okay. We're not arguing about that today.
Okay.
So, but this is kind of assuming that the players are playing characters in its area that all this is accessible really easily.
Yeah.
Like an MMORPG, pretty much.
Yeah, and there was one other thing I didn't really like is when they were talking about specialized abilities where you could get, or I'm sorry, not in specialized abilities, but when you get the learning and there's a chance of getting insight and great insight, where you, if you get insight or even great insight, you get the abilities of that class as a 12th level character for X amount of time. I'm not too comfortable with that.
You don't have to use it if you don't like it, obviously.
Yeah, that's like all of a sudden they from 0 to 12th level in ability in like no time, and they retain that information for X amount of hours or days or however. I don't know. That just seems a little, I don't know.
Well, it won't do them any good if they have like a 3 strength, so.
Well, I know that, but you know, what if they were like a cleric or a magic user? Suddenly, you know, you have someone who gets the ability to turn undead as a 12th level magic user for a week.
What good is it going to do if you have nothing to turn?
Knowing the people I play with, they will take full advantage of said ability. 1 week, they're like, oh, yeah, I'm going into that undead temple. I'm turning every single thing that's coming my way. I'm grabbing a treasure and getting the heck out. Yeah, those kind of players.
Okay, well, the dungeon's filled with all ghouls. You're in trouble.
Not if they're 12th level.
I guess not. You're right.
Now, if it was filled with, I don't know, mummies and vampires, might be a little more difficult.
Vampires, yes.
That's right. But, yeah, I had a little bit of an issue with that. That just seems a little far-fetched. So, I don't know.
Yes.
So, what happens through all this? You go through the different... You dabble in each character class that you're able to. And so, what happens? What do you do as far as joining a class? How do you decide that?
You basically have to decide it. It says joining a class is decide which class that you want to continue going on into. So,
and all those other abilities that you got from other classes, you just kind of forget them?
I don't think you retain them. I think they disappear, because if you don't continue practicing something, you lose it.
Mm.
I would do that as far as picking a class. So,
yeah. So, would you use this, Vince?
No.
This system?
No.
Does it? Yeah, I don't think I would use it either. I think of what we talked about previously on the character background, I think that's plenty enough, you know?
Yeah.
I don't think I have to role play their whole background or their lives, which is kind of like what this is.
Mm-hmm.
And coming up with a whole game mechanic for that. I mean, that seems like it's, you know, delving into the minutia of it all, and really don't need that. Just have the characters write up their background if they want to, a few pages, a couple of sentences, whatever, and that's good enough. What about you, Vince?
I would say, yeah. I was just looking at it to see if there was something
that you might be able to pick out there that maybe use.
Well, because you asked about what happens when they join the class, and I just realized there was a little bullet point at the very end that says when characters advance in level, they lose all skills which are not used by their main character class unless they make a special effort to study them as described below. And it goes into a whole thing of how to keep it and how to use those skills that they don't have that class for. So it's possible to keep it, but basically it's telling you that you will lose it if you don't use it, like I said.
Yeah. And even then, now you get into an area where like you're losing the idea of character class archetypes, and then you're kind of it's becoming character classes are becoming something else. I don't like that. I like to stick with the old character class archetypes. You're a fighter. You're a fighter. You're a magic user. A magic user, and so on. So
I don't know who came up with the system, but I think it was just something they were trying to do that was a little bit different.
Yeah, and that's okay. I mean, if there are people out there who've used this system, we'd like to hear from you.
Please. RFIstaff@gmail.com. Let's head into game mechanics.
Oh, man. What the heck is that?
Stand aside, you fool. I have a spell that will work here.
What do you mean I can't hit with that? Oh, right, fine. Show it to me in the book.
Welcome to Game Mechanics.
Tonight in Game Mechanics, we're going to be talking about another section in the Greyhawk Adventures book. And I think this is a pretty cool section. It's called the Hall of Heroes. The Hall of Heroes. And what this is, it highlights various NPCs' personalities in the world of Greyhawk Fantasy campaign setting. Some of these are mentioned in the original box set, and I believe also in the folio that came out before that, which I have copies of both. Some of the characters that are mentioned that they basically give stats for and a background for is like the Lord Mayor Frisia the Greyhawk, Naroff Gaskell, and gives his whole background on how he became the mayor of Greyhawk. A couple others that are mentioned that are from the original box set were the... they actually give the name of the mage in charge of the Valley of the Mage. Another one is is Carl of Ernest, who's in the Duchy of Ernest. And if I'm trying to remember one more, I believe that is it that's actually highlighted and given some background from the original box set and folio. Other than that, these are other personalities I have not heard of until they were in this Hall of Heroes. I mean, I don't know how they all are mixed into Gary Gygax's original campaign, if they were even involved at all. But, you know, you have one character by the name of Derridor Fanshan. She is the constable of the city of Greyhawk. You also have Sentel Nurev, who's the captain of the guard of the city of Greyhawk. The heads of the Assassins and Thieves Guild. And really what it is a, and a lot really just on the city of Greyhawk itself, of all the important people that you might run into as a player character. So, and it's not a very large section, but just a few little few pages on some personalities that, you know, as a DM might give you an idea of some of these people. I kind of wish it was a little bit more fleshed out. I wish they would have taken maybe from each ruler of each area that was in the original box set, and and actually wrote up some stats for him, and maybe just a one paragraph about that particular ruler, about their background, that would have been nice. But at least it feeds the imagination. Well,
this is copyrighted 88, so this is when Gary was already out. So
yeah, Gary was already gone. He has been long gone for a few years already out of TSR. So,
and this one was put together by James Ward and coordinated by Warren Spector. So
Warren Spector?
Warren Spector, I think that's his name, yeah. Like, flip open that book again and look. Yes, Warren Spector is the coordinator and editor of it. So, I mean, they probably made up various names to put in there.
Yeah, I do like the sections on some of the stuff that are the original box set. I do like that.
Well, the cool thing about Hole of Heroes is you could stick your own NPCs in there and make up your own Hole of Heroes. Like, there was a really awesome, awesome website probably about 10 years ago. It was called the Hall of Heroes. I think it was Hall of Hero or heroes.com. It's long since gone, but it was the greatest like character database I've ever seen.
Wow.
It was community run. You would upload your character based on whatever edition, and you put a picture of it, and you do a backstory, and other people can rate it, and then you would get like prizes based on that, like a gold star, silver star.
Yeah,
and it was really good because it gave you a good, like, you could quickly jump on there and grab an NPC and download it.
Oh, wow.
It was, I liked it a lot because there was some really good drawing on there, like, and good backstories of characters you could use, and I can't find it anywhere, so I think it's long gone.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a really good site. And if anyone ran that site to listen to the show, please write in because I'd like to know more about it.
Well, one of the ones I liked, if you want to talk a Hall of Heroes, the personalities section of the Rogues Gallery.
Yeah.
I mean, that has all the big names out of there. You have, I believe, Tensor.
Big B.
Big B.
All of them.
Mordekainen, I believe, is in back there.
Mm-hmm.
You have
Tensor.
Tensor, Arak's cousin, whoever that is. And I love the background on that character. There's the one of Phobos or Phobos. Mm-hmm. He was the character who, and I'm just going on the top of my head because I thought it was just such a cool concept that this person was, he wasn't resurrected. There was only a druid that could reincarnate him, and he came back as. He came back as a lizard man. And there was another one. He came back as a centaur. Might have been the same druid. I don't know. but I like the one that was Phobos. He was he actually came back as a lizard man. I just thought that was such a cool character. Yeah, I love to play a lizard man. That'd be so kick butt. I just remember thinking that back in the day. But yeah, there's some pretty interesting personalities that are in that Rogues Gallery. If you don't have it, see if you can find one on eBay or somewhere in a used bookstore.
That's funny because I was reading an article today. It was someone found an old edition of Polyhedron magazine, I think it was. It had an article about how to play a player character raised Lizard Man.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
Yeah, it just triggered my memory when you said that. So.
Hmm.
Anyway, the Hole of Heroes is also a good idea. Is you could take your player characters that you retire and stick them in there to use them.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And your DM has access because they're all in the same world, probably. Why not just use them?
Exactly. And one of the things I like about this is it doesn't. Yeah, is that your, like you said, your player characters eventually could become part of the Hall of Heroes, and they could be a part of that history, and they're interacting in the world. Why not? Why can't they be in the Hall of Heroes eventually?
I hate to say that Greyhawk got the short end of the stick for Hall of Heroes fame. I don't think, other than the people with magical spells.
Well,
who else really is? If you think of Greyhawk, who do you really think of?
Yeah, Mordekainen, Tensor.
Yeah, but other than those people.
Well, you have Gord, the rogue.
Uh-huh.
Well, you have Ayaz.
Okay, when I say Forgotten Realms, who do you think of?
Oh, yeah. I know, and that's a good point. By this time...
Dragonlance, who do you think of? I mean...
Well, yeah, by this time, around 87, 88, Greyhawk was not the focus of TSR as far as campaign worlds. It came more about Forgotten Realms and...
Dragonlance.
And Dragonlance. Now... I don't know if I want to get into this debate, but I liked Forgotten Realms at the start.
At the start as in?
Pre, when it was in first edition.
So the pre,
I liked it.
The pre-Avatar stuff?
Yeah, before it became the next edition. I liked how it was all set up. Forgotten Realms in first edition AD&D.
With the, what is it, the myth weave and everything? And
well, it was fleshed out enough, and I thought it was a great compliment to, you know, it was a nice alternative to World of Greyhawk if that's what you didn't want. You know, if you wanted something a little bit more, I guess, Tolkien-ish, because yeah. That's what kind of Forgotten Realms seemed to be like. That's cool. I mean, and that's okay.
And Jeff Grubb did a great job fleshing it out in that one hardcover book, too.
Yes. But getting back on track with the Hall of Heroes here. Sorry for the digression. But, you know, I do like this section. If anything, it gives ideas to the DM on, you know, what you can make as far as maybe NPCs and for player characters, maybe for the players something to aspire to. It's like, hey, maybe I can become the constable or the mayor or something like that. At least a name to put with the particular position in that city or town or that kingdom. I mean, at least they know who's the go-to person in that particular case. So... I like this section. I think it's pretty cool.
There's a lot of uses for this section. Actually, I want to hear what other people have done with this section, or if they've even bothered using it, or bringing famous characters into their campaign. How do they handle it? Give us a shout, rfistaff@gmail.com, osrgaming.org, or call us 570-865-4210, the hotline. And let's head into Creature Feature Theater.
That is not it.
Welcome the unwary to the Creature Feature Theater.
For Creature Feature this week, we pulled a creature out of the Greyhawk Adventures, sticking with our theme this week, of the Vampire Cactus.
Yeah, this thing is nasty, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a really... It's kind of like, what do they call those Venus flytrap things?
It almost is, but this one can reach out and touch you.
Yeah, it has these needles. It looks like a regular plant, like a needle, like leaf plant, kind of like the plants you see in like a jungle or something. But on the very end, it has these needle points that shoot out to 3 yards and stick into this victim. And it only causes 1 or 2 points of damage, but the needle is still attached to the plant itself. And what the plant does is it just starts sucking the life out of you.
It sucks your blood.
Nick.
Sorry.
And, yeah, it sucks 1 to 3 points of liquid per round, i.e. blood, that remains in the flesh. But if the character tries to rip it out, which is probably the first natural instinct you're going to do, you're going to be pulling out what would be, like, barbed. So it's got a serrated edge being pulled out. So you'd be doing more damage to yourself by doing it. So you might as well just chop the thing.
Yeah, and that's the only way to destroy it. You have to destroy the core of the plant.
Yeah. And you might as well, if the thing's going to be attached in your arm, for the time being, I would just like slice like the cord, so to speak, instead of just trying to pull it out, because you're going to cause more damage to yourself than just pulling it out.
Yeah.
So what do you think about this, Nick?
I like it because it's immune to lightning and electrical attacks. So they try to shoot a lightning bolt at it. Nope, forget it. And it gives a reason why, because they ground the electricity in the desert through their roots. So like lightning strikes throughout the desert, because when reading this, it's a pretty the ecology of the plant, it's very tall, so it's more than likely the first thing to get struck by lightning.
Yeah.
Hence, it's immune to lightning. It just shunts all that electricity down through the ground. So, yeah, it's a pretty cool monster, especially being in a harsh environment, the desert itself.
Yeah.
I mean, if you want to add insult to injury, if you have a group of adventurers that are still ill-prepared, they didn't bring enough water, they didn't bring enough food, they're in armor, they're sweating their keisters off, and all of a sudden they see this plant. Oh, great. Let's go get some shade. Thwap, thwap, thwap. Why do I hurt now? Why is I feel woozy?
Nothing eats the vampire cactus. I wonder why.
Yeah, it eats them.
Yeah.
Though I guess it bears one fruit. It's rather very sweet. You can eat that, but other than that, it's a very bitter-tasting plant. So... And it gives where it's found in the bright desert, in the dry steppes, the sea of dust. So I like that it's geographically specific to the World of Greyhawk campaign setting.
I'm looking at this, and there's a couple things that strike me as really weird. And then maybe I'm not used to this book itself, because it's more of a second edition cuss book, but
yeah,
it says it's non-intelligent, which we can understand it's a plant. Treasure incidental, which makes me laugh. Yeah. Reaction modifier -3, and then it says Thaco, which something mm-hmm. we haven't really seen. 16. And I thought that was a typo.
Yeah, to hit armor class 0.
Is it just saying based off of what?
It's hit dice.
Oh, I see what it's saying now. I'm my mistake. But whose Thaco would it be going off of, though?
I don't know.
It's Thaco.
Yeah, it's Thaco.
Oh,
it's
okay.
To hit armor class 0, so... That would
see that's I'm not
based
used
off
to,
of that.
Yeah,
I'm that's what it would that. Need to hit armor class 0.
I'm not used to seeing
the vampire
that.
Cactus. Yeah.
I'm not used to seeing that in the books.
Right. Yeah. That kind of could throw you for a loop. I can understand that.
I just wanted to point that out because someone else pointed that out to me. So I was playing dumb along.
Yeah. With no, it. That's not for the player to hit it. That's for the monster to hit armor class 0.
Yeah.
So.
So this is a pretty cool creature, and yeah. It takes a lot to destroy it. And don't think by just like cutting its leaves off and cutting its little pinches off, it'll go away. Because, yeah. No, it regenerates.
It is susceptible to fire, though.
Yes.
Fire-based attacks do double damage.
You have to kill the core to kill the plant, because everything else just regenerates.
So set the sucker on fire. Watch it burn.
We don't need no... Oh, never mind.
Burn, baby, burn. Disco Inferno.
Yeah. Ways to make this more interesting? Nah, I think it's good as it is.
Yeah, I like it as it is, too. I don't think this is a... You know how I am. I like to have creatures like work in conjunction with others. No, this guy's a loner.
Oh, yeah, definitely a loner. I don't think he would work with anybody. He's non-intelligent, so...
Yeah, basically, it's... Whatever is littered around the corpse is littered around the thing. Yeah. it does not play well with others.
Yeah. It's a bad plant.
Bad, naughty plant.
So has anyone used this cactus, vampire cactus out there? Write us, tell us, show us. Dragon's Horror coming up.
As the secret portal yields to your efforts. You stand amazed at a vision from the most fevered dreams of avarice. Before you lies the Dragon's Horde.
Okay, Dragon's Horde, and keeping with our theme of the Great Hawk Adventures book, one of the magic items that we'll be featuring here is the Ring of the Pomage. I like this magic item. This is pretty cool.
It's definitely a quest item or a plot item.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Here's the description of it. This black ring was created by a wizard from the Wild Coast. Hating all inhabitants of the Pomage, he used it to gather troops of goblins, ogres, and orcs. He then led these troops into battle against the humanoids of the Pomage. The ring is considered a threat by many other lands. Other lands as well. I think that's a typo. Other lands, other as well. I think that's a typo in the
program. It could be, yeah.
Yeah, other twice. Anyway, the ring allows a character of evil alignment to gather a horde of goblins, ogres, or orcs in much the same fashion as a barbarian horde is summoned. The wearer of the ring decides which race he wishes to gather and can gather a number of creatures determined by his experience point total. So if he wants to gather a race, he wants to gather some goblins. So it's his character's experience points divided by 750. That's how many goblins they can summon.
Wow.
Ogres, it's XP divided by 4,000. Orcs, it's XP divided by 1,000. So the horde can be raised only on the Wild Coast and must be raised for a specific short-term purpose. For example, the horde might be gathered to attack a rival tribe to raid the county of Ulek or destroy the elves in Selene. It takes the horde at least a week to assemble, and whatever its purpose, the horde will remain together for a maximum number of weeks equal to half of the ring wielder's level. Deviation from the stated purpose may cause the horde to disband sooner at the DM's option. Disbanded humanoids will return to the Wild Coast by the quickest and safest route. Note that the ring does not charm, beguile, or otherwise compel obedience, and that a ring wielder whose humanoids disband will not receive a warm welcome the next time he returns to them. The ring can be used but thrice in 1 year. So, interesting magic item. Powerful, but yet has some limitations, as noted in the text. Only 3 times a year or thrice in a year.
I think we understand what 3 times means, yeah.
Yes.
Thrice.
Thrice in a year. Hey, that's what it says in the text.
Quest item, definitely. Plot device.
Definitely. Oh yeah, definitely a quest item.
I could see the king coming to you guys saying, we know this ring, we know that Duke such and such has found a way to get this ring. Can you stop him? And race against time campaign.
Or maybe a particular evil mage has gotten a hold of this. He's on the Wild Coast. Maybe he's the long lost brother or son of the original bearer of this ring, and he wishes to get it for himself, and now he has, and he's summoning hordes of orcs and goblins and ogres to do his bidding.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it's a pretty cool item. It almost sounds like the One Ring in a way.
One ring to rule them all, yes.
Yeah, pretty much. It doesn't charm. It doesn't beguile. It just somehow entices those to come join your cause. So,
and I definitely encourage everybody to pick up this book if you can find it, or if you don't, if you have it and it's just sitting on your shelf, much like my shelf, in perfect condition.
Yeah,
because you haven't really used it much. Because it has some really good, after reading it for the show, has some really good little tidbits in here you can use and throw into your campaign that maybe your players won't recognize because they're so used to like the three core books and
right?
Probably the Monster Manual 2 and the Fiend Folio, and then you throw in Unearthed Arcana and, you know, Oriental Adventures, and you got this book, and you got the Dragonlance book. Some really good things in there that people don't realize.
Right.
And you have
I think you bring up a good point here with this book. Mm-hmm. Is
you had some ideas about this.
Yeah, you know, yeah, I do. If I was going to run, and I would love to someday, if I was going to run a strictly World of Greyhaw campaign,
yeah,
this is one of the books that's going to be in my arsenal, along with my original box set, World of Greyhaw, and I do have a copy of the folio.
Oh, yes, with the giant maps and everything, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. This book is... This book really is not to be intended to be used on its own. You really need the box set in conjunction with this book. I mean, you can't really have... I mean, you can use the box set on its own. This is a great addition to that, I think. I mean, from the beginning, you have... different clerics of different gods like Bokob, Celestian, St. Cuthbert. So you're getting into like the specific clerics of those different gods. If you want to create a character who's a cleric of St. Cuthbert, and now you have a way of following that particular god for your character class.
Instead of just saying, I am the follower of St. Cuthbert, and that's the end of it.
Yeah, it gives a little bit of background on what you need to do as a priest of, you know, maybe Foltus, which is the god of light and resolution and law. Or if you want to be, you have clerics of Ayas, the demigod. You can have that too.
Why not?
Why not? I mean, in each different god that your character worships who is a cleric, there's some spells that they get specific to it. Let me see if I can find one real quick here, like Elona, who's the goddess of forest, flowers, and meadows. You have a spell called Stalk. And this spell makes the target nearly invisible in natural surroundings and almost totally silent, as if he or she were wearing cloaks and boots of elven kind. So that's a special spell specific to the clerics of Elona.
Mm. I could see where second edition took off with this of Forgotten Realms, because if I remember that book with all the deities, they had special abilities and special things, and that's where the edge weapons came in for clerics.
Yeah.
Or should I say priests at that point? Because they weren't clerics. They were priests. So there's your difference. Ha! Anyway. So that really evolves the Dragon's Horde and a little side note from Nick. And let's head into our last segment.
Time is short now. They are coming swiftly. And we have but a moment. You must make your voice heard now. Cast your ballot against the 10-foot pole.
So the 10-foot pole. We got a new pole up this week. It's a quick one. But you're writing up a new adventure campaign for, say, Greyhawk or whatever. And for your maps, you like to hand draw them, as in draw them yourself, say through an AutoCAD program, or hand draw them on a blue graph paper or whatever. That's the first option. Second option, you want to steal a map from a mapping website, because there's tons of mapping websites out there. You can just steal a map and populate it on your own. And the final option is you use one of those pre-generator things where you go, I want a lot of rooms with a lot of doors, a couple dead ends with secret entrances, populate with monsters, click. And done. There's your adventure for the night. So what do you pick, Nick?
I actually have a group of kobolds and goblins, and I whip them into a fury, and I have them make my maps for me.
Okay, if you had to pick one of the options.
Oh, one of the options?
Yes.
Yeah. I would pick the first one. I do mine, quote unquote, by hand. I use a computer program, and I draw it out that way. Like what's on the core rules CD.
Mm-hmm.
There's a few other ones out there online that you could download that are really good for that sort of thing, creating dungeons that are for free, and free is always good. I know there's some like Campaign Cartographer, if you want to pay the money for, you can do that if you so choose.
A lot of times what I do with Campaign Cartographer, they have a website.
Yes.
And they have a forums. And they have a section showing off your best maps. I go in there and I steal a map for my adventure.
Yeah, if it's just like a some sort of like GIF or JPEG.
Yeah, and that's what it's there for people to take and use for their campaigns. Oh, I'm not stealing it to print it and sell it. I'm just, you know, populating
it. Use it for your own use.
Yeah, and that's fine because they say you can use for your own personal use, and that's what I'm doing.
Yeah, not a problem with that.
I can't draw, and I'd rather just steal the map and populate it myself.
I like drawing them out. I just feel better that way about doing it, because then I can determine which way the dungeon is going to look for my own purposes. It's like, okay, there's going to be a room here, and in this room there's going to be a pool, and there in the pool there's going to be a statue on top, and there's going to be three doors going out, and they'll go here and here and here. So yeah, I like doing that.
Okay, cool.
That's just kind of my thing. But it doesn't mean I haven't stole maps. I've borrowed maps from time to time from, like, websites. I mentioned before the show, I don't know if they still have the feature in the magazine, but Knights of the Dinner Table used to have a section. I forget the name of it.
Populating your dungeon. I thought it was Dungeon a Day or something, or already populated dungeon or something.
Yeah. Yeah, and they would just have like a one or two pages of like a map that was created, and there might be a few interesting things on the map, but it's up to you to populate it.
Yes.
So
Wizards of the Coast actually had one for third edition that you can just populate a map, and you can just download it that way. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's up anymore because the links are since dead since I looked before the show. But they did rearrange a lot of their links, so you probably could find it, because you could still find stuff for D20 Modern if you look hard enough.
It's buried somewhere.
It's still up, but it's just buried on their website.
Yeah.
So that's the that and this and that. I think that's going to end the show.
Yeah. I like this. So, again, I think this is a book worth getting to mine for ideas. There's also... They didn't get to mention, but there's like a whole slew of like new spells in here.
Yes.
By, you know, various named magic users that we all know and love, like Odaluk and Otto, Mordekainen, Nystol. So all those named spells. You know, there's a whole bunch of them there too. So, and there's some good plots in there too. There's some adventure seeds in there as well. Various places that you can go. So, don't rule it out.
It's funny too, because I don't know many people that use this book. And to prove my theory on this, fact that I have one that is practically brand new condition, and I got it used. I don't know, maybe 10 years ago or something used. And the fact that I won an auction off of eBay, and that was in the stash that was in there, which I didn't realize it was, but didn't matter. And the book looked brand new in there, too. And it was from some collector that was selling, I think it was a wife selling her husband's things after he passed away. And she was pretty much giving it away, and she just wanted to make money for shipping. And I got all the books. Because I spoke to her about it. I'm like, well, these books are really good condition. You sure you don't want to? And I got a couple first edition printings of books, too. So he must have been really playing, you know, back in the day.
Wow.
And I felt bad, and I spoke to her about it. She said, no, just I'd be happy that someone has it and uses it. And I was like, okay.
That's nice of her.
Yeah. But anyway, that's going to end the show this week. So I'm going to say keep it original, keep it old school, and welcome to Volume 2 of the Roll for Initiative podcast.
Night, everybody.
Night.
Roll for initiative.